This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So let's talk about season 5.
Great. I can tell you everything about season 5.
I do want to start by asking, what were the big... You obviously, Matthew tells you a lot, but what were the big surprise, or does he tell you a lot?
I get more information than most, I guess is the better way to say it. At least more than most of the actors, I think. Obviously, the writers are in the room, so they know... Kind of, they see the board and they see how it all progresses, and they have to write it. So, but I get a lot of information, and I'm used as a sounding board on a lot of the stuff as well. I think effectively. So, there wasn't a lot of it that was a surprise for me.
Well, what were the big twists and turns of the season that really you're like, wow?
Lane's situation was a significant surprise, I think, to a lot of people. And I think Don's fidelity, honestly, was surprising to a lot of people. Again, not necessarily me, but it was, I think, an interesting way to progress the series and the character forward. And then, of course, set up the last two seasons and see what happens because of those developments.
What was your reaction to the script this season for the first episode? You literally don't say a word until like the 8th minute.
Number one, I was glad I didn't have a lot of lines. I didn't have a lot to memorize. You know, it was interesting for me. I think it's where we left off of season 5 with the question, are you alone? Is different. It's a different question than are you single. It's a different question than are you lonely, and it's a different question than are you with anyone. It's are you alone, and what does that mean? And the reason we don't get an answer to that is because there's a lot of different meanings to that. And we open, you know, with a man sitting in paradise reading about hell, and I think that's an interesting juxtaposition. I think, you know, you see in the key art, and you see in as the season progresses, you'll see a lot of dualities and two sides of this person. We also ended last season with Don walking out of the light and into the shadow. We saw Don leaving Megan in the spotlight and retreating to the shadow. I think that's significant. So I think and again, where we are in the 60s and where we are in the culture at large, not just in United States culture, but world culture in such a turbulent time. I think that all serves to add depth to this story and to this man's journey. And how is he going to navigate these increasingly choppy waters?
Now, we can't talk much about the season, but the advertising for this season is very interesting. The one poster that's been out there, are there any clues in there that we're supposed to be thinking about?
Well, I mean, I think the central motif of it, obviously, is these two versions of this one man crossing. And which one are we supposed to be? They're both central. But which one are we supposed to be following, honestly? One of them is with somebody, one of them is not. And I think that's not... it shouldn't be lost on people. One of them has a briefcase in his hand, one of them doesn't. I mean, it's a very... You know, it's a very rich image.
There's also the one-way sign.
There's one way, there's a stop sign, there's a lot of things. those aren't mistakes. if you guys have talked to Matthew, you realize that he doesn't say, oh, well, let's put 12 tape recorders out here, because 12 is a fun number. It's like, no, let's put 7, because we need 7. You know, he thinks about these things. And he's very involved in that. He was very involved in the choosing of this particular image and finding the artist we wanted. He wanted a specific style of art. I think somebody said, you know, that guy's still alive. Want to just have him do it? He was like, yeah.
He's been doing it for 50 years.
Yeah. It's amazing. and honestly, that's an amazing opportunity to have that person come and contribute his... you know, vision to the show. And when I saw it, I was like, because it's so different also from our normal stylistic kind of cues, which are very graphic and very sparse, and this is chaotic and different in many ways kind of suggests the world we're moving into. Bright colors and crazy, you know, tones and a lot going on.
There was a big disparity between where Peggy was headed and where Don was headed in the last season as far as her becoming more, I don't want to say more hip, but more sort of in the know, and it looked like people like Don and Pete were challenged by this sort of new political, hipper, maybe going into a beatnik sort of mentality. Without saying anything, does that sort of continue that disparity of not even personality, but of attitude?
I think part of what we're continually exploring is, you know, time doesn't stand still for any of us, unfortunately. And the longer you survive in any industry, the more you run the risk of facing irrelevance. And as you grow older and the next generation comes up and you find yourself out of step with music or popular culture or movies or TV or cinema or whatever, because you're old and you have shit to do, you have a life. I mean, you know, teenagers are built to consume popular culture. That's all they have time for because that's all they care about. And this was the time at which that market segment just became the only market segment that was being appealed to. We're still in that world. The majority of feature films these days are pitched to 14-year-olds. I mean, they just are. Whether it's Twilight or Transformers or whatever, these huge, huge franchises, millions and millions and millions of dollars, because they're the ones that see it. And they buy the toys, and they buy the books, and they buy the magazines, and they buy the posters, and they buy the ancillary stuff. And that's not new. So Don, when he has people like Ginsberg and Peggy and Stan and this sort of younger generation surrounded by them, realizes that that's an asset. I think that's a big part of why losing Peggy was a particularly difficult goodbye. But obviously Peggy needed that place. Hello. There's no more seats.
God, I'll just kind of look.
Go sit. There is a sofa. Oh.
No worries.
So I think that is a difficult challenge for Don to find that relevance again, to find that place, or to accept the older patriarchal executive place in that world.
But that must be such a challenge for him mentally, because he was the upstart at one point. He was.
I think that's everybody's. Whether you're Tom Brady or whether you're, there's always somebody younger, that hungrier, that's gunning for your job. They may not have the skill set that you have or the experience that you have, but there's always somebody else that's.
Or Alex Smith.
Do you think that part of his attraction to Megan was because she was part of this younger generation, and he could learn from that?
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, when you know, part of season 5's kind of hiccup was that Don and Megan were this dynamic duo at the office, and then he realized that she didn't want it. You're like, but you're so good at it. Why wouldn't you? It's the greatest job ever. Like, not for me, for you. And that's a hiccup for him. Of like, she says, I want to go do that. Why on earth? I mean, you know, would you want to give all this up? Because it's not her dream. It's Don's dream. And I think navigating that was a tricky thing. He says to her at one point, you want to be somebody's discovery. You don't want to be somebody's favor. And I think that's a big realization. And I think a big thing for Don to do is of letting that go.
If you could give Don advice, what advice would you give him?
Oh, Lord. You know, I think I'll answer that question by answering a different question, but hopefully it'll make sense. I think, you know, it's more like, what do I wish for Don? And I think that there's a world or a resolution to his issues where I wish for him to find peace and or balance and or happiness. I think Don's life has been one out of balance for quite some time. And not to get to life pie on anyone here, which was an excellent film. If you haven't seen it, please do. We find out more in season six about why Don is how he is and why Don does what he does. And his house is built on a weak foundation. He's a fundamentally kind of damaged and broken guy. And I guess, you know, I would wish for him or I would advise him to sort of fix that foundation and then kind of work on the house. Like, don't work on the house first. Like, work on that foundation first. I hope that was cryptic enough.
Speaking of cryptic, last season I remember our roundtable because you were talking about the poster that for that season, and you're like, you'll find out soon enough what it means, and of course it was the Joan episode. And so now I'm excited about, do you intentionally, are you like messing with us, or like, are you like, or is that just part of the job? Where's the fun? Sort of not being able to say anything, but knowing.
You know, I think I've said this before, but I find it interesting that we become the sort of standard bearer for this idea of being secretive. And I don't. It's not like I'm a TV fan. I watch a lot of TV shows, and I don't see anybody talk about their season at the beginning of the season.
They can't.
Well, no one does. Like, it's not like they came out in Homeland and said, "Oh yeah, by the way, here's how it's going to end. Tune in." And yet we're the kind of people who are known as the like cryptic secret keepers of all time. So, you know, I think obviously part of experiencing television, especially in the media landscape that we live in now, is that it's so easy to have the experience be spoiled. You click on the wrong link, or you're reading a thing about maybe there's going to be an Arrested Development movie, and then you see the other links, and you go, Mad Men, oh, Mad Men, click, and then you're like, episode summary, and you go, no, I haven't seen that. What happened? I didn't want to know that. I just wanted to know about the Bluths. And so it's so easy to disseminate that information instantly and globally. So I think we just try to be careful. We just try to be as careful as we can, because we don't want anybody that wants it to not have that experience of seeing it at their own pace. And you can watch TV on your phone now, and you can watch it in your car, and you can, please don't, by the way. I've actually seen that, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You're driving a car and watching a television show. And it's personal for people, and I think people that like the show and they want to watch it how they want to watch it. Some people come to the show late. I was a late adopter of The Wire. I started with season 5, and then I watched seasons 1 through 4 on my phone on a movie set over the course of about 2 weeks. And I mean, it didn't lessen the experience for me, because I hadn't read anything, and this was in a pre-Twitter era, I think, for me, which I still am in a pre-Twitter era. But it was just as real for me, because I had heard that it was great, but never heard any of the specifics.
That's good.
So I think, you know, we can hope that people come to the show however they come to it, but they get to experience it without it being sort of spoon-fed to them or told, oh, you have to watch this one and this one, and this is why this means something. Like, who wants that? Then it's like homework. You know, then it's like you've got to... got to do your popular culture studies homework or something and write a paper about it. I don't think, other than people that get paid to do it. most people don't sit at their television and take notes. Most people. The vast majority of the television audience doesn't sit and take notes at television. You guys get paychecks. That's different.
Yeah. You mentioned Lane's death last season. I think it really hit Don pretty hard, and he had a lot of guilt around it as well. Do we see that sort of lingering with him as we go on? Because I noticed the firm is still called Sterling Cooper Draper Price without getting anything more.
We, you know, I think with a couple of the big events in Don's life that have ended badly or the way opposite to the way that he wanted them to end, and I'm thinking specifically of his brother's suicide, Lane's suicide, and Joan's decision last season. Don had the capacity to change those things and tried. He gave his brother money. He said, take this money, get away from all of that and all of this. This will help. Go live your life. I can't be a part of it, but do that. And the brother went left and went the other way and ended his life. That sat very heavily on Don. With Joan's situation, Joan, you don't have to do this. I will win this account. Please don't do this. I told everybody that we're not okay with this. Unbeknownst to him, it had already happened, but he had the best intentions. He finds out later that it didn't matter. That sat very heavily on him. And then with Lane, he finds that Lane is doing this. He initially covers for him with Cooper and says, no, it was me. I fucked something up. Don't worry about it. It's a thing. Confronts Lane, says, here's your way out. You can't be here, but there's a way out of this. Trust me. It's easy to start over. I've done it a million times. You will be fine. And Lane doesn't take his advice. So I think it does resonate in his life that he, in a lot of situations, is very good at convincing people to do what he wants. And in these three particular situations, life-altering situations, he couldn't. And that's an interesting observation, I think.
You directed another episode this season.
It's the best one.
talk a little bit about directing this season and the challenges of directing and acting and the schedule.
Yeah, directing had been brought up to me at the end of season 3, and I said no thank you. And then during the time between then and now, I saw John Slattery do it very capably. I saw Ben Affleck do it also very capably. And I saw Jennifer Westfeld do it also very capably. And I'm talking about acting and directing at the same time. So I thought, okay, I have now seen a couple examples of this in action. And I think I might be a little bit more prepared for the responsibilities of this. And I did it last season. And I did it again this season, and it was as interesting to me this season. I had a lot more to do in my episode this season as an actor, so it was sort of a degree of difficulty more challenging in that respect, because you are completely of two minds on set. It's a very, very difficult mindset to stay in. Of you're watching one thing as a director, and especially if you're in the scene, you're watching one thing as an actor. I remember doing scenes with Ben on The Town where I would be like, wow, you are totally watching me as a director right now, not as an actor. It's a very interesting switch to be able to flip. And he's very good at it and justifiably lauded for his talent. But I found it, again, I think I said this last year, but it was a continuation of that. I found it completely invigorating and a really, really interesting perspective shift on a group of people and a set and a situation that I thought I knew intimately. And then you take your perspective from here and you can turn it 180 degrees and you go, oh my God, I didn't even see that whole side of it. That's crazy. There's a whole thing that's happening behind me too. That's nuts. And it's just, as an actor, your focus is constantly in front of you, and as a director, your focus is 360 degrees. And that was once again fascinating, and I hope I did a good job. I was obviously being facetious and saying it's the best one, but it is.
we had a very spirited discussion with Vincent earlier, discussing about you directing, and he said he's been searching for things that you're bad at and can't come up with anything. I think it would actually make a lot of male readers happy to know that you are bad at something. Is there anything that you're not good at?
Yeah, there's tons of things I'm not good at. Round table interview.
Thinking of things that you're bad at.
Thinking of things I'm bad at. I guess I'm too friendly. That's pretty bad. No, it's, you know, it's, I'm not, I'm, look, it's, no one's perfect, least of all me. Then he's very kind to say nice things about me. And if I may return the compliment, he is criminally overlooked on our show for what he brings to the show. He is a phenomenal actor and a wonderful guy, and is, in creating the character of Pete, has somehow made this person who on the page is loathsome. Punchable, I think, has been described in many an article, and yet has infused this character with this aching sadness and longing and vulnerability that is remarkable to watch. I actually had an incredible scene that I directed with he and Allison Brie, where I was like, I could shoot this all day. It was a long scene, and it was a lot of story in the scene, but it was like a little one-act play, and I was just like, I felt bad because they were both so good that we didn't have to do it 100 times, and they're both such wonderful actors that I could go to each one and say, okay, do the thing that you did where you're not quite as that way, and you're a little more this way, and then watch them play off each other, and I was like, let's do this all day. This is great. And that's Vincent. I mean, and Allison as well, but Vincent is his creation of Pete Campbell is ever evolving and, for my money, always interesting. So that's what I'm good at.
Is there another time period, era, decade that you would want to take a role in, aside from the 60s?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's dependent upon the material, honestly. I'm a big Downton Abbey fan. I'm fascinated by that world and how different that world is. I actually shot a TV show over in Buckinghamshire, which is kind of north of London. I guess Downton Abbey is east of London. West, I don't know where it is.
West.
Outside of London. And it was in one of these gigantor manors that was on 400,000 acres and had sheep and cows and everything. And I was looking at this house like, oh my God. And the guy, the little caretaker, comes up and goes, you know, this is only a third of the real house. I was like, the other house had two more. He goes, yeah, this is the middle part. There were the two wings.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you got to be kidding me. And they had lakes and trees. And just, it was this crazy thing. And I'm fascinated by that. I think that's part of what, you know, a small part, but a part of what our show is resonates with people, that it's close enough in our time that we recognize things like phones and cars and planes and briefcases and, you know, things that we have now, but it's also different enough so we're separate enough so we can kind of look at these people and go like, well, at least I'm not like that asshole. So I don't know. I would do... Do you have a script? Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, we'll talk.
Thank you so much.
We'll talk there. Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, Gerald said he's going to set
up. Yeah, multiple things.
Yeah.
We're
about to plan on
like
this
before.
Oh, great.
So,
yeah, you're going to plan on
that.
Can I
that's awesome.
And
oh, good. Please tell him I said hello.
What are you doing this after the wrap? Do you already have your next film?
I'm doing a movie called Million Dollar Arm for Disney.
Yeah.
And then I'll go back to England and do another series of Young Doctor's Notebook. And I'll probably sleep for like a month. And but I think Jen's going to play New York, and I think we'll be East Coast oriented.
Craig Gillespie.
Craig Gillespie, yeah.
Yeah.
Talented guy.
He is.
Yeah, I'm very excited to work with him. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Really appreciate it.